Brent Q back with you here on Thursday night, talking Ravens, talking Texans, and now we'll bring on one of the great NFL writers around, and he's been around for a long time covering this league, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, thank you so much for coming on, and I believe you're still in Baltimore. I know I saw you on Wednesday at the Ravens facility, but I believe you're still here.
I am still here. I went back out today to talk to Gary Kubiak. I've got a story tomorrow on Owen Daniels, Justin Forsett Saturday, Kubiak Sunday, and then while I'm here, I write blogs and tweet and do all my regular stuff, so I've had a good time, but I've been too busy to get out, which really bothers me, but I come back in the spring and summer with my wife, who is from Silver Spring, and they have a place out on the Chesapeake Bay, and we come back a lot and go watch the Orioles, so I love Baltimore.
That sounds good to me. Invite me out to that place on the Chesapeake.
I'd be happy to.
Well, that sounds great. I'm guessing you're only here to cover the Kubiak/Owen Daniels return. You don't typically go to the team coming to Houston a week out in preparation for that team coming. The story in Houston now is Gary Kubiak, who was there for 8 years as the head coach, returning, right?
That's a big story. Ordinarily, since I'm the beat guy, I stay there. When I covered the NFL for 8 years between the Oilers and the Texans, I traveled, did this all the time, and I liked it a lot, not having to be over there watching practice and stuff, being able to go on the road and see different facilities and see friends. And so I knew as soon as Gary came here, we knew the Texans were going to play the Ravens up here. We just didn't know when. And I told my boss, like, we sent one guy to Cleveland early to do Johnny Manziel before the Texans played Oakland. We had another guy go out early, do Matt Schaub and Antonio Smith. And I said, no, I'm going to Baltimore. So I'm glad it's here. It's exactly the way I thought it would work out. Ravens in the playoff race, Kubiak doing really well with his offense. And so it's what I consider a good game. It's an exciting game for Houston. They're 7-7. They're starting a quarterback, probably Case Keenum, who wasn't on the team Sunday. And he'll be their fourth one because of injuries. But the fact that it's Kubiak coming back, not just him, Owen Daniels is one of the top five most popular players. Justin Forsett wasn't there very long, but and of course, Kobe Jones has played against him, but there's a nice contingent. Philip Supernaw was there, so there's not like Philadelphia. Philadelphia has 8 former Texans on its roster, and it came to Houston and beat the Texans this season.
What do you think of Rick Dennison? I know he's kind of been quiet under the radar because of Gary Kubiak being the head coach, but he certainly has had an impact on both organizations.
When I interviewed Flacco yesterday about Kubiak, he mentioned twice Rick. They call Rick Rico. And Rick is, there's not many coaches in the NFL have degrees in mechanical engineering. He's a really smart guy. He doesn't act like it. When I say that, I don't mean he acts stupid. He just is not the kind of guy you would go around acting like he had a degree like that. His father was the president of university, I believe, Montana. Rick, it's interesting that he was a defensive player who has been an offensive coordinator, offensive line coach. He learned under Alex Gibbs, special teams coach. He's done everything. He interviewed for the Bears head coaching job when they hired Mark Trestman. The Texans were coming off their 12-4 season. And Phil Emery, the general manager, interviewed him. And Rick's a very classy guy, hard worker. Kubiak, I know, wherever he went, and he wasn't going just anywhere. He didn't have to work. He had the money, but still being paid by the Texans. But I remember at the time, he wanted to make sure he went somewhere where they had a great organization with a really good coach and quarterback. And it worked. And then he wanted to be able to take Rick Dennison and tight ends coach Brian Perriani with him. And it seems like it's worked out very well when I see where the Ravens are in scoring, offense, rushing, passing, everything compared to last season.
One of the things I think we know is the elephant in the room, J.J. Watt. what has he what can we say as far as the superlatives, I guess, of J.J. Watt? What is it that he's added to his game this year that has made this year more exceptional than previous?
Five touchdowns. And the thing about Watt, I like to tell people, most people say, like, he's really big in Houston. He's getting really big nationally, a lot of commercials. I mean, if you had a product you wanted to endorse, you'd want a guy like Watt to do it. I wrote a column this year before they played Indianapolis the first time that Watt, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson were all 25 and the new faces of the NFL as the older faces, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, guys you see on a lot of commercials as they started to fade. And they're not fading yet, but those guys were the ones we would start to see. And Watt is he's exactly what you think he is. He's a great role model. He's 25, does an incredible amount of charity work. His thing is, I'm 25 and single. I'm not going to sit around on my sofa watching SportsCenter when I could be doing things in the community. And he has a good time doing it. He doesn't publicize things like he got one of his sponsors, Papa John's Pizza, to deliver pizza to 140 firehouses in Houston area. And then, of course, one of the firehouses let it out. Of course, Papa John's didn't mind that at all. And it got a lot of national and local publicity. And he got one this week when a kid sent him his autographed jersey to let J.J. know that the seven-year-old was leading his league in rushing, and he was going to be a great player. That was hilarious. He was a tight end at Central Michigan who wasn't very good and sold pizzas and bombed out as a pizza salesman and walked on at Wisconsin. He's from a Milwaukee suburb. And one day he's standing there and they said, "Hey, you, come, we don't have enough defensive linemen. Why don't you come stand over here on this side of the ball?" So he said, "Okay." And the star was born. And one of the things he does is great against the run too, but despite the touchdowns and 16 and a half sacks rushing from an inside position, they move him all over the place. But counting his quarterback hits and his sacks, he's got 59 and a half. Nobody else has got as many as 44. And that's not counting his 10 passes he's knocked down. He's just a tremendous all-around athlete to be 6'6 and 295. And he's just loving life. And he's 25, and he's probably going to run away with the Defensive Player of the Year award second time in 3 years. The only other guy to ever do it that much that quick was Lawrence Taylor.
Mm. Wow. And you've seen a lot of football. John McClain from the Houston Chronicles with us. Is there a ceiling on this guy, John? And if he doesn't have one, or maybe it's maybe just another few feet higher, what are we talking about here if we take a step back?
I don't know what. One reason they wanted Jadeveon Clowney is they needed another pass rusher so teams could not focus solely on him. They got nothing out of Clowney because of injuries. And their number two pass rusher, Whitney Merciless, has four sacks. And I was thinking yesterday, what could he do if he had Dumervil or Suggs playing with him? Mm. If he had another guy like that on the other side to take some pressure off, and he's got nothing. And he's had, it's the first time in his career he's had three games in a row with multiple sacks. He's had seven in the last three. And teams, there was a great picture from the coach's end zone video that came off that thing on the NFL.com in which you can get those. And it showed the Colts had four players lined up to get Watt when Andrew Luck was in the shotgun. And that was amazing. And the caption on it that I retweeted was, you know, the ultimate in respect for Watt to see that. But you'd think it would free up other players, but their pass rusher is just not good enough to take advantage of it. And I'd like, you're talking about a ceiling, if he had some help, like a Dumervil or a Suggs on the other side, or had somebody with a push from up the middle, no telling what he'd be able to accomplish.
I think it's crazy because we put so much emphasis on, you know, who's the number one pick and all that. And Jadeveon Clowney, when you said his name, I kind of forgot about him and the fact that he's on IR and all that. But, you know, the story clearly is not written, but what is your take on his first year in the NFL? I mean, was it a case in which it's unfortunate or, oh boy, we're going to be looking back on this wishing we never drafted him?
Well, if you look back and it's because of an injury, that's what it could be, because he's had nothing but injuries. When he was hurt at South Carolina twice, I think he missed two games in his career because of injuries. And he played through a couple, but nothing bad. At the combine, everybody examined him and came up with possible bone spurs in an ankle that might need to be removed. No big deal. Well, that never happened. And he was incredibly unlucky. He had sports hernia during OTAs. And then he came back and looked really good in the first two preseason games. Then he had a concussion and he missed the last two. Then he came back to the first regular season game and hurt his knee, had to have surgery on two different pieces of cartilage. And they thought that would take and he'd be fine, but they always knew when you operate on articular cartilage as well as meniscus cartilage, you can play for your whole career, but there's a chance if it doesn't take, you might have microfracture surgery. So he tried, it didn't work. They gave him the microfracture surgery. Now he's got to be out immobilized for 10 weeks. And so his knee will just become a piece of his whole leg will be spaghetti, and he'll have to build that back up before he ever goes in there and does the knee. It's at least a 9 or 10 month process. Oof. And if he's not what he was when they drafted him, you know, once in a generation pass rusher with unbelievable explosiveness, there's no reason he couldn't come back and at least be an effective defensive lineman. He was good against the run. He was actually playing outside linebacker in their 3-4. So when he does come back, I would imagine he would be his pass rush specialist like Doomerville, just starting off. But nobody knows for sure what will happen to him, and they haven't lost anything because they never had it. 7 tackles, 3 for loss, no sacks.
Mm. Last question, John, and we only have about a minute. With what you know about Gary Kubiak, and you know him really well, and what you know about the league, is he the kind of person that would want to come back to Baltimore one more year or be on his way to another job?
Gary Kubiak could coach the rest of his career here and be happy. But he doesn't seek jobs. He doesn't even have an agent. He's the only coach I know who wants to be a head coach that doesn't have an agent. But I think he's too close to 2-14 to be gone after this year. And I hope the Ravens continue to win and he plays well and he gets a second chance.
Interesting. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, legend. John, thank you so much and we'll catch up soon.
My pleasure, guys. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Holidays.
Merry Christmas indeed.